Welcome to Spotlight on Africa with me, Daniel Finnan. This week, we're going to be hearing about an African startup that's using innovative technology to fund businesses. A small selection of African startups gathered at the Viva Tech event in Paris this month. And during a special panel, there were discussions of the African digital frontier. One such startup that's driving this frontier is Ovamba. Ovamba provides funding to small and medium-sized businesses. Businesses that are usually overlooked by the traditional banks. The startup currently does most of its business in Cameroon, helping small enterprise access capital. Ovamba's expanding, looking to push its services across the whole continent. We spoke to Viola Llewellyn, Ovamba's co-founder. She told us about the innovation they're using to fund businesses.
Ovamba provides small and medium enterprises with short-term capital to fund the purchase of inventory from both domestic and international sources. And it also funds farmers with the ability to buy more commodities such as coffee, cocoa, and other items so that we can help them get better prices and satisfy their off-taker contracts.
One of the things that you've described is adding so-called African data into risk assessment and compliance. How do you do that? How do you reversion those processes to make them appropriate for the African continent?
Well, the first thing is the distinction between us and banks. Banks work on credit and credit checks, and as you probably know, there aren't really that many comprehensive credit bureaus on the continent. So therefore, information needs to be pulled together. We work in a very reverse way. We look for information, anecdotal or otherwise, and run it through our machine learning in order to test certain hypotheses to see whether or not they stand up to honesty and repayability, their behavior around their businesses, and how viable they are for us to take risk with. So when we look at different groups, for example, you take a person who's maybe comes from a family or an ethnic group that has been purely involved in agriculture and they suddenly decide that they want to be in business, there are certain skill sets and hurdles the way African societies are set up that are going to have an impact on that. And we also take a look at how different ethnic groups look at their relationship with authority, repayability and honesty, and without giving away, sorry, too much of the secret sauce. This is what we've been doing for the last 5 years, as we take this information and pull from things like social media, very qualitative, quantitative and traditional data, put that together and keep on testing it. And we've been able to find certain patterns in different groups of people.
You currently operate in Cameroon and Côte d'Ivoire. Mm-hmm. Where's next?
Most likely either Sudan or Ghana. And we definitely have an eye on Senegal. To be perfectly honest, it's a case of a Pan-African solution. And on the greater level, we've even had interest from Latin America. So it seems that anywhere where there is a formal or an informal sector that has a problem with financial service access is where our solution best works.
Because they're quite different environments, Cameroon, for example, and Sudan.
Very much so. But Sudan is a key opportunity where they have to rebuild the banking sector. There were people there with their businesses who've not been able to grow. We provide growth as a service, is the actual name of our product. So we look for ways in which to fill those vacuums and those holes so that people can have more of the goods that they have to sell. That's truly the most simple thing to do.
How much cash have you funded so far to these businesses?
We've originated about 143, 144 million in deal flow, and we've funded about 22 million of that. And that delta is a distinctive and very important one. It really speaks to the fact that the need and the credit gap in Africa is very real, which the World Bank maybe 6-7 years ago measured at $368 billion credit gap. And in Cameroon alone, we've actually originated that much deal flow that could be funded. But as a startup, the chase and the race to actually raise capital to fund that is very difficult. Instead, what we find is a very smart ability to create velocity to the capital so that as the money goes out, it comes back in. We've done that 22 million off maybe a little less than 10 million itself.
Of the businesses that you've encountered, what are the most promising? Which ones excite you?
Our very first customer will always be one that excites us because she was a woman and she was a pharmacist. and she couldn't get a loan. And you'll notice I never mention the word loan. That's because we actually don't give money to SMEs. We fund the purchase of their goods and take ownership for them until they buy it back from us over a period of time. This particular woman couldn't get money to fulfill the orders for HIV medication and stuff like that because they said, you're a scientist, you're not a business person, and you're a woman. So anytime she wanted to do business, she had to borrow money from her family or her friends and hope that she could make enough money. When she came to us, she was the very first person, and we funded her with 12,000 euro. And that was exciting. And she came back a few times. Right now, the customers that I'm truly excited in are those who are in the tire business, where they were only ordering one case of tires every 2 or 3 months, to the point where they are now doing 4 every 2 months. And then there is an individual who usually, I think they're on their 3rd or 4th transaction with us, €500,000 each time, bikes and motorbike oil and engine oil, to the point that his Moroccan supplier left and came to our office to say, who are you people? This guy was a low guy on the totem pole and is accelerating and has shown 450% growth. How can we get you to fund the rest of our customers? So that conversation is taking place. This speaks to the fact that there is the great potential to partner with suppliers in order to provide these facilities.
When will the local banks cotton on to you and see you as a threat?
We have gone to the local banks to offer them support to enable them. When we first got into Cameroon, we first started partnering microfinance institutions. But they were so slow at decision-making and so expensive in their business model, it wasn't viable, we couldn't grow with them. So we created banking software, something called iBank. Some of them took it on, some of them didn't. And it was a great way for us to also get data to test what we were doing. But we abandoned that and we didn't want anything to do with banking because of the way the regulatory bodies put a treasury cap on all activities, over-regulated in the wrong way. It doesn't help at all. But now we've been going to banks again to say, hey, look, we can really help you with share of wallet. And they all love the idea, but they don't have the internal ability to quickly make decisions. And they are the bottleneck.
We're here at Viva Tech, and there have been discussions about so-called leapfrogging in terms of startups. It strikes me you're not really necessarily about leapfrogging. You're about fixing something that's broken.
Very much so. We're about creating the tools that will create the ecosystem, to be perfectly honest. We worked with microfinances and gave them tools to become better managed. Some of them, they start and they disappear. They don't stick around for long. Creating the ecosystem for sustained growth is what we're focused on. Leapfrogging is not that interesting to us, even though it does happen. But what it does say to us when we sit down with investors is to show them that when Africans adopt technology, it's very, very sticky. And if we're putting technology tools in their hands in order to create velocity, then we've got a very interesting story, and it's one that is worth considering. It's not enough to be a leapfrogger. It's got to actually lead to sustained growth.
In terms of those startups, those fellow startups that you meet and this idea of leapfrogging, is that still possible on the African continent? As we've defined that term, it relates back to the use and the adoption of mobile phones. But is that possible with tech now, with startups?
It would appear that people are constantly on an old narrative in order to show that they have an affinity to understanding the African narrative. The things that Africa has leapfrogged with are things that are regulated by the government, where they've been too slow to adopt at the beginning of a technology cycle, so that by the time they say yes to it, something else has come along, and that's what they get to say yes to. I don't know how much more leapfrogging that we're going to do. And as was said this evening, why can't we just have our own organic development, growth and manufacturing and design, which starts to speak to things like intellectual property monetization of products and goods and ideas? That would be attractive. The leapfrogging, you can only do that for so long. It's not the point. It's not what drives growth in Africa.
Viola Llewellyn there from Avamba. She was speaking to us during the Viva Tech event in Paris earlier this month. If you want to find out more, visit the Ovamba website, www.ovamba.com. For this week's Spotlight on Africa, I'm Daniel Finnan. Thanks for listening.